Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's time to play like a Jet
with your host, Scott Mason.
Play like a Jet. What does that mean?
Garrett Wilson. Wow! What a catch! Touchdown, Jets! That kid's amazing. Gibson on the return. Near side. I don't see any flags. Gibson inside the 30. Hits the Jets. And he's going to go! Jets win it! Touchdown, rookie Xavier Gibson. Game over.
Allen has time. Intercepted. Sauce Gardner's got it, Allen. Tripped up. He could not get past Jermaine Johnson. Oh, look at the speed of Breece Hall. He's done it again. Breece Lightning. 62 yards for the touchdown.
And he's sacked again by Quinnen Williams. What a beast. Number 95 for the Jets.
Listen. Thank you.
This is Play Like a Jet. My name is Scott Mason. You can follow me on Twitter at PlayLikeAJet1. And the Jets have not one, not two, but three new starting offensive linemen that they acquired via combination of trade and free agency. One of them is Tyron Smith, the longtime all-pro offensive tackle from the Dallas Cowboys. We're not going to talk about him today. Today we're going to talk about one of the two guys that the Jets got from the Baltimore Ravens. We'll talk about the other one with the same guest, but that'll be a separate show tomorrow. Right now we're going to talk about an old friend of the Jets, somebody who's coming back after having been here for a year, and that is Morgan Moses. And to talk about it, the only person I know that could talk to me for 20 minutes about Chuck Clark and give me so much information that he made me ready to run through a wall, excited to see Chuck Clark play covering tight ends for the Jets. Unfortunately, it didn't work out and he ended up getting hurt, but he is back this year. So now we have all that information in our memory bank. We're going to get to learn a lot about Morgan Moses and what he brought to the table the last 2 years with the Baltimore Ravens with my guest, Ken McCusick, who does all the film study stuff for 105.7 The Fan. Ken, thanks so much for coming back on the show, sir.
No problem, Scott. Happy to do it.
So, Ken, let's do a quick refresher and do a little bit of a background on Morgan Moses. Morgan Moses, of course, ends up getting picked in the mid-rounds by Washington after playing tackle at Virginia. And he's picked in the 2014 draft, so he's been in the league a decade. He spends a long time with Washington. Other than his rookie year where he suffered a Lisfranc injury, he plays all the way through and he starts every single game for Washington throughout the time that he starts in 2015 to the time that he leaves at the end of the COVID season in 2020. Then he gets to the Jets in 2021. He plays 16 of 17 games. Again, you're seeing the pattern here. He's a little bit older, 33 years old. We'll get into that. But he's somebody that has a lot of durability. And just so you know, The familiarity is there. As Morgan Moses himself said, it's a big part of why he's excited to come back to the Jets. He said, being here again, knowing that Coach Sala runs things the same way when I left, I felt like I had so much unfinished business here. Didn't really get to do what I set out for myself to do. So I'm excited. I'm a different player than I was when I came here. Obviously, they have all these pieces in place. Aaron Rodgers, Garrett Wilson. My son's already like, I can't wait to meet Sauce and all that stuff. I just look forward to coming back and obviously finishing the business I didn't get to finish. Being in Baltimore for 2 years and being a part of a winning culture, being able to be a sponge and soak that in and bring that back here is going to be vital to the success of not only myself, but the team. So that's where Morgan Moses is at coming back here with the Jets. But he talked about the winning culture in Baltimore. He talked about the 2 years in Baltimore. And Ken, a lot of us were kind of surprised when Morgan Moses ended up leaving after 1 year here. Many of us thought that Joe Douglas would do more to try and keep him here, especially with the injury issues that we had seen with George Fant and Mekhi Becton, but he ends up going to the Baltimore Ravens. So I want to talk to you about what you saw while he was there. Let's start with what he's like as an offensive lineman. Size and lengthwise, he's got you covered in both areas.
Yeah, huge guy, 320 plus. I don't think he's seen 320 in a few years. I think he's playing significantly heavier than that. But 35 and 3/8 inch arms, which is a big deal for a tackle. The Ravens have always gone to long-armed offensive tackles. I get a lot of grief locally about people thinking I'm all about arm length, but the Ravens actually draft that way. They're very much arm length. Gustavo also. He's had perhaps his two best years of his entire career with the Ravens. Now, I've scored his Ravens games on a block-by-block basis. PFF has scored his entire career. PFF ranks his seasons with the Ravens slightly ahead of what he's done both with Washington and with the Jets. And he's been very good, very durable, very reliable at right tackle. They've given him a little more help this last year as a pass blocker, but not so much that you'd say he's having trouble. And his pass blocking statistics are outstanding. I wasn't really expecting him to be nearly as good, and he's worked through some injury issues this last year, pec and shoulder, that gave him some trouble. And I'm afraid that may be part of the reason why, in the end, the Ravens decided to let him go so cheap, because it does not make any sense at all on the flip side that they would trade him as cheaply as they did for a guy who fills a major hole so cheaply for the Ravens. Just kind of agog at the trade when it occurred. In some ways, Ravens fans will remember back to the Anquan Boldin trade after their Super Bowl year. That only freed up a couple million dollars, and it netted them a sixth-round pick for a guy who just had a great postseason. Ravens fans hated the trade, but at least there was a reason for it, that they were trying to sign Joe Flacco. The Ravens have enough fungible dollars on the margin of their cap that they don't need to cut Morgan Moses here. And yet what they did was effectively a cut to trade him for net pick value of approximately number 144, which is just not very exciting to get for Morgan.
Ken, I want to come back to that later, because obviously that factors into the Jets bringing him in here and what fans may need to know about why the Ravens were willing to let him go. We have some theories on that, obviously, and probably ties into what you were talking about with him battling through injuries, toughing them out for the most part, still played 14 games, but we'll talk about that in a little bit. First, I want to talk about what you were expecting when Morgan Moses came to town. Now, he moves pretty well in space, and from talking to you, it sounds like he moves better in space than you thought he would.
Yeah, way better. He's a much more mobile blocker than I expected him. The Ravens run a lot of counter, and so that means he's often the trailing puller on a play going to the left. It's either center guard or guard tackle that usually will pull to the left on two-man pulls, these counter plays. And my system allows for him to get a courtesy point if all he does is run his track and not be presented with a block that he then misses. However, Moses is remarkably decisive, and even when there's not an obvious block for him to make on the track, he'll deviate from the track, make one. And he's exceptionally good with that, exceptionally good at lining people up in space. And a lot of that, when pulling, Some of it's the footwork. Some of it's making sure you know the dance steps to not have problems with your center or your guard if he's staying in the position, to make sure you don't trip or get obstructed. But some of it is just the decisiveness of the player. And he reads very well the player in front of him and what block he's going to make, and then plays off that and makes him a very good mover in space, much, much better than I thought. He's probably less good moving straight forward into level two, but he'll do everything you need in terms of sealing the edge on that side, which is usually what I call a half level move up to seal. So he's trying to hit a scraping linebacker that's coming right along the line of scrimmage to try and make a tackle, as opposed to moving up into level two to meet somebody where it's truly a one-on-one open field kind of contest there, where Moses is going to be, like most linemen, a little bit outdone by quickness of an opposing player. So just an exceptionally good player in terms of his mobility, much better than I thought he would be. And he certainly met in every expectation what I hoped he would be as a pass blocker at right tackle. So both those things, you know, at a high level. I've got nothing bad to say about Morgan Moses. I can give you some other scoring details if we want to get into that.
Well, Ken, before we get into scoring details, I want to talk a little bit about what you said with him as a pass blocker. Can you go in more detail on that?
Sure. He's never been a consideration to move to left tackle, even though the Ravens have had that need come up during his tenure here. So they've had the need for left tackle to be filled in. They've always gone to McCary before they've gone to him and moved him. Some people think it's continuity issues. I don't think it's that. They think he's not a great fit for left tackle. He doesn't mirror quite as well. He's a good 12 to 6 blocker when he starts to get beat to the outside. I think he tries to be maybe a step late. He keeps his leverage on the inside to try and make sure he doesn't get beat inside. Let's put it that way. And when he does start to get beat outside, he's pretty good at using his size and length to push a pass rusher past the pocket. That's 12 to 6 blocking, as I would call it. You get him back past the back pylon of that pocket. You keep the quarterback's feet and the cone clear, as I call it, and allow him to still make plays. I think that any quarterback would appreciate that. If you're a quarterback who holds the ball a really long time, you still can come back even from a good 12 to 6 block and still get into the play and participate in a sack or clean up. A player like Rodgers at his age, I don't think that's going to be an issue. He's going to get rid of the ball pretty quickly and not be wanting to hold on to it for a long time.
How about as a run blocker?
Outstanding as a run blocker. Most of it's this mobility, really good at sealing the edge. Size is everything you'd want. Every component of run blocking, he's at or near the top of NFL right tackles. There are a handful of guys you might pick ahead of him, but Moses, at his age, being as good as he is remarkable. And I certainly didn't see any drop off during his time with the Ravens. I'd say, if anything, you know, this is as well as he's ever played as a run blocker as well.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Play like a Jet. Play like a Jet.
Ken, talk to me a little bit about some of the strengths and weaknesses that we might not have touched on yet.
One of the things, I mean, I mentioned that he was never a consideration to go to left tackle. If you look at PFF, you'll see he has some listed snaps at left tackle. Let me assure you, all of those are unbalanced line plays. So he gets moved over to left tackle, which is two away from the center, but there's always a guy on the outside of him. So whenever the Ravens ran unbalanced line, which was not that infrequently, 4 or 5 times a game probably this last season, whichever side he was always tucked. So that's what the Ravens, you know, are showing you. They think his weakness is probably the speed more than any other power concerns. And, you know, still pretty good at moving people, good with duo blocks, good moving to level two himself as needed, and good holding the backside of a double team where he then allows a guard to move to level two. A lot of that is it's a very important function for a center to be either able to stay behind or move ahead. It's less important to tackle, honestly, but it's still a very nice to have in terms of Morgan Moses. When you have a run-based offense like the Ravens, it's always looking to take care of that. Let's see if there's anything else I really didn't hit on from my notes here. I think that's pretty much it. He was one of my favorites while he's here, and you know, I'm really ashamed that he's going, and hopefully he'll continue to play well for the Jets, certainly.
Ken, we know about the PFF grades, but let's talk about the Ken McCusick scoring system, because according to your system, Morgan Moses was right in there with Linderbaum and Zeitler, two of the better offensive linemen in the league. Pretty impressive. Your scoring system didn't have much of a difference between the three. Can you take us inside the numbers there and explain that system and how you graded Morgan Moses throughout the year?
Sure. So I grade every block, and it's a frequency and severity of errors system primarily. So you make a block, you miss a block, you don't get credit for that play. If you allow a penetration, you get a -2. A pressure is a -2. A quarterback hits a -3, a sack is a -6. That often gets divided among multiple players. Penalties are 5 points, sorry, 3 points for every 5 yards. And then it comes up to a total point total divided by total scored snaps, and that gives you a score, and that's where the .77 comes from. PFF uses a not totally dissimilar system. Their underlying system, old fans of PFF remember, is a +2 to -2 system on each play per player, with most plays being graded out as a zero. But it's definitely a balancing around a neutral point system, as opposed to minus a deductions from 100 system. So anyway, that's the primary difference. PFF, in terms of, we're looking at the same games, by the way, and I talk to those guys all the time about, you know, I've got, you know, two more pressures for Zeitler in this game. What did you rate him on this play and that play? And they're always very good about being forthright with why they called things one way or another. But we have some significant weighting differences in how we do things. And one is that penalties are much more serious, I believe, in post-snap penalties in particular. And we'll talk a little bit about this with John Simpson, that cause much more significant deductions. The other thing is that PFF only works with integer values for pressures, quarterback hits, and sacks. When there is one of those events, I separate it out into whatever degree the player's responsible, their proportion of responsibility I judge to be. So in a sense, PFF can only give a 1 or a 0, and I can give a anything between 0 and 1 on those plays in terms of scoring that. So anyway, Moses for the season allowed 6.6 1/12 sacks, as I called it, remarkably similar to PFF, which had him for 6.00 exactly. Quarterback hits were 4.0 for me. I didn't see what PFF had for that. And pressures were 10 1/3. They had him for a few more pressures. That's probably a case where they're giving multiple players pressures, and he's getting a fraction of pressure. On the other side of this, I'm much more strict about what the offensive lineman has to do to keep a opposing pass rusher out of the cone. So there's some offsetting factors there, but I have him for a few less pressures than PFF has him for. So anyway, it works out to be .77 for the year. He was very consistent, never had a failing grade the entire season. As I scored, he did have a D in the opener. That was against Will Anderson of Houston, a D- against Jacksonville. They have two fine edge rushers who did this last year. And then a D versus Watt in week 18. So a very fine season for him, but lots of A's and B's throughout the year. And overall, I'd say his season ranked a high B after adjustment, whereas I'd say that both Zeitler and Linderbaum were basically a B+ or A- perhaps even after adjustment. So just a very small difference in terms of the quality of the season from those three.
Ken, were there any games or any plays that stick out to you with Morgan Moses negatively and positively?
I mean, the positives show up every time the guy continues to maintain his momentum, be decisive in space. I mean, just pull after pull, you see that. And they're just, I would have difficulty believing there's a better right tackle in the league currently in terms of pulling, even though he does not look the part at all. He's just extremely good in space. He didn't have any kind of like big triple block play this year that I can remember. He had some, you know, he had some nice recoveries when pass blocking, but there isn't any one play that I'd point to that, hey, this is the Morgan Moses play that's a signature for 2023. Offensive linemen, you know, the way I look at it, they're like baseball players. They get a ton of at-bats in a season, and every one of those should be scored. In case of Moses, he got 854 scored snaps. He has more than that when you include plays that resulted in a penalty or kneels and spikes, which I exclude from my system. But, you know, 854 opportunities like this is a lot to judge someone on. You don't have good control groups in football, generally speaking, and nothing like that for running backs or for most other positions in terms of judging, you know, how well they're actually playing. But Moses, you know, durable right tackle who, like all offensive linemen, there's a lot to judge there.
Ken, the way you're describing him stylistically, it sure sounds like Morgan Moses is going to be quite the gift to Breece Hall.
I would agree. I think, you know, the Jets got a really good one and they got him very cheap. It still has me scratching my head and it frustrates me to a certain degree that he's gone. And the only caveat I'll put on this is that the Ravens are in the know on where he is from a health perspective, and I'm not. So what the Ravens know about him, and frankly also what they might know about Gus Edwards, might have gone into that decision. And if you look at it, you can map the money spent for Derrick Henry and said another alternative was they could have had both Gus Edwards and Morgan Moses on the team. If I'm the general manager, I'd probably go with that plan, go with the Moses Edwards if I have positive reports on their health. So I have to question in each case, you know, what the Ravens knew with these players going out the door.
Ken, I'd imagine the presence of Daniel Falele plays into this a little bit, right? Because obviously, if they think he's ready to start, he can step in for a lot cheaper.
Yes. So Daniel Falele, interesting player over his couple of years with the Ravens, purely developmental tackle, enormous player, enormous man, one of the largest ever to play in NFL history, does not use that physical gift very well. Does not punch, does not strike opponents, does not strike first, which is a real problem when you're an offensive lineman. Now, you don't want to get off balance, but in the other case, the worst thing you can do at his size is kind of play patty cake. We saw a little bit of improvement out of Falele at the end of this last year, and it's a really small sample size, but he made out of his last 94 plays. Now, that's only about a game and a half. He was in the 70s. Now, you'd think that's not really that great. Morgan Moses, obviously, better than that on the whole season. And it's, you know, it's even for if I'm picking out the best snaps, you know, you always have, you know, a recency bias thing you kind of fear about this. But, you know, he'd been so bad in his previous year and two thirds, basically, that change was really dramatic. So he'd had a 0.46 aggregate score all the way before then, and then all of a sudden he's scoring in the low 70s, and you think, okay, that's a really big improvement. I'm not sold on the notion that he's really ready to step in and be the starting right tackle next year, but he may very well get the opportunity.
Ken, I want to talk about the contrast between blocking for Aaron Rodgers and blocking for Lamar Jackson. You watched Morgan Moses block for Lamar Jackson over the past 2 years, Tyler Huntley as well, obviously, but more important to focus in on the star quarterbacks here. In terms of Morgan Moses' game, what do you think that he did in Baltimore with Jackson, who is very different than Aaron Rodgers, that will translate to be a very strong asset to Aaron Rodgers and the Jets' pass-blocking unit?
I think, you know, with Jackson, one of the keys for the offensive lineman is the play's still going on, the play's still going on. The other one is can't afford to be illegally downfield with all the RPOs the Ravens run. So I don't see that as either one of those as really that big an issue in playing for Rodgers. Basically, I think if you can block for Jackson, you can block for Rodgers. Okay, a lot of 12-6 blocking is going to play very well. You know, blocking guys south of the quarterback is going to play very well with Rodgers. Rodgers is a shorter guy, which I know he hates to get teased about, but is not a big tall quarterback in terms of looking over the offensive lineman. He really likes to have space and throwing lanes. I think Morgan Moses gives you a lot of that. And with Jackson, you've got the added responsibility of you better have your head on a swivel. You better know where he's going to go based on your block, and you better continue blocking until the whistle. And I think Moses is pretty good about that. But I don't expect that to be as important with Rodgers as it was with Jackson. So and the other one I mentioned briefly is cannot be illegally downfield. One of the most costly penalties in the NFL. Because it's an option penalty for the defense is to go illegally downfield. And it seems like it's only a 5-yard penalty, but it's exponentially worse than a false start penalty because of that.
So Ken, based on everything you've said, And you did say that you think the Jets got a good one and it'll really help the Jets' offensive line. When I saw this acquisition, I always liked Morgan Moses when he was here the first time. And like I said, I was hoping Joe Douglas would do more to keep him. So when I saw the Jets got him back, I was happy. When I saw that the Jets gave up next to nothing for him, I was even happier. We've talked about the Ravens side of this and why they might have done it. Maybe they're a little bit concerned about the nagging injuries he had because of the fact that he's 33 years old. Maybe they feel like Daniel Falele is ready to step in, even if you're not entirely convinced of that at the moment. But in terms of the acquisition that the Jets made here, when you look at the guys that were free agents on the offensive line, you see all the crazy money being spent. And then you look at the Jets giving up, like you said, what amounts to the number 144 pick and taking on $5.5 million, a very reasonable salary, between that and getting Tyron Smith on a one-year deal, as opposed to going out and spending huge money on somebody like Robert Hunt or Michael Onwenu. Now, the caveat here is guys like Hunt and Onwenu are guards. Onwenu can play tackle or guard, but he's probably going to play guard because that's where he's better. Either way, the Jets didn't have to break the bank here to get Morgan Moses, and I think he's probably just as good as any of the free agent tackles out there, with the possible exception of Tyron Smith, who they got anyway, and they didn't have to spend a ton of money. Sounds like a very smart acquisition by the longtime disciple of the man who built that empire in Baltimore, Ozzie Newsome, of course, talking about Joe Douglas.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree with almost all of that. The barriers to entry in acquiring a tackle are enormous. Okay, at left tackle, it's basically like getting a starting quarterback. It is the second hardest position to fill on the entire team. The Ravens, as a team that makes the playoffs most seasons, are always going to be drafting mid to late, never have a chance at a top left tackle, which makes the job even more difficult. And now they've also restructured Ronnie Stanley's contract and cut it by a year, such that there's no question, and there really wasn't any question even before, because there had been a $20 million cap savings in 2025 anyway. So Ronnie Stanley is going to be with the Ravens one more year. They've just guaranteed, obviously, that Morgan Moses is not with the Ravens any more years. So that means you need to replace both tackles over a two-year period. It's a monumental uphill task to do that. And the fact that Jets were able to do it in you know, just a brief free agency period here and get two players of that quality, I think is remarkably fortunate for them.
Ken McCusick, 105.7 The Fan's film study analyst. Who else could give us the lowdown on Morgan Moses? And of course, we're going to hear from him on John Simpson as well. Ken, thank you so much for coming on. Really appreciate it. We'll do this again tomorrow when we talk about John Simpson. In the meantime, I mentioned 105.7 The Fan. Talk about how people who don't live in the local area can listen to your podcasts and your radio appearances and all the other work that you're doing right now.
Well, filmstudybaltimore.com is the website. And if you want, in particular, has articles and podcasts there. The articles have contained a lot of offensive line scoring from this last season. If you want to see my commentary, I do commentary on every game for every offensive lineman. There are a few games where we have a road game or a short week or something where I don't actually publish an article, but most weeks I do. And it's always, 100% of the time, it's on the offensive podcast. In the part two of it, which is a second hour of offense content, starts off with the offensive line play if you want to hear about those players. 105.7 The Fan has me on usually from 8 to 8.30 on Tuesdays. And if you can listen in, you can do it on the internet now. But they also usually repost my segments online as well. But anyway, Scott, thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Looking forward to talking to you tomorrow about John Simpson. In the meantime, check out everything that Ken is doing. He's got lots going on. Check out everything we've got going on at playlikeajet.com. And be sure to give us a 5-star review for the podcast on iTunes if you haven't done that already. Easy way to help out the show if you like what we're doing. Doesn't take you much time, doesn't cost you any money, but it goes a long way to help us out. So if you could go ahead and do that for us, we'd be quite grateful. And for the latest and greatest in New York Jets podcasts and content, you know where to go. That's Play Like a Jet Digital, playlikeajet.com.